and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580 with Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner. Good morning, sir.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you, Ron, so much. I sure appreciate it. On April 15th, 2021, just in case anyone doesn't know that yet,
yes.
Right? April 15th, and I heard you talking with Colleen earlier.
Not tax day, right?
Not tax day. It is actually May 17 this year. But for those businesses that need to make estimates.
Business
tax estimates, you'll need to get those done by today. I'm sure they'll all be happy to have that remembered for them. Thank you so much, Dennis. Yes. So I was listening to the Beatles tune, The Tax Man, earlier. And for whatever reason, decided to listen to the lyrics a little more closely. And the lyrics go like this. Does 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all, was the comment. And I was commenting to Heidi that it must mean then that they were in the 95% tax bracket.
That's just brutal.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. I don't know whether they decided to remain in British society as a result of that, or citizens, if you will.
I know the Stones moved out. The Stones moved to the south of France when the taxes were up. So I assume the Beatles relocated too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People move with their feet. That's New York City knows that, you bet. So thank you for listening. Really do appreciate it. We've had a nice number of people come in as a result of listening to the show over a number of years, 10, 12, 15 years. Thank you. Today we have joining us, too, Heidi Thompson. Welcome, Heidi.
Our Good morning.
Managing executive.
Thank you.
And our ICP, Retirement Income Certified Professional. And very much an expert there in terms of retirement income. Shay Pataja will not be joining us today. Heidi is going to be doing the Shay Heidi stats this morning. And then two comments from CPA this week that none of the listeners know. And I'm going to didn't ask him if I could share this. So I will not share his name, but we were having quite a conversation about tax software this week in terms of what the actual software was figuring for a client's taxes. And we got into a discussion about the deductibility of a non-deductible IRA according to this software. In essence, it was showing that the conversion, a Roth conversion, was not, that portion would not be taxable given a non-deductible IRA contribution. I've probably already lost most people in the weeds. But the bottom line is, he was saying, Dennis, the software is not keeping up to the complexity of the taxes these days. He said the IRS, and you know, most of us know accountants are not given to hyperbole. He said the IRS is on its knees right now. They're issuing all of these extra funds out to the population, trying to figure the taxes given all the recent changes. So I would just say, for those of you filing your taxes, take a second look, perhaps, on your tax return to make certain, as far as you understand, that it's accurate. There may be some inaccuracies. And our own client had questioned the accountant on this particular situation. And we did too, and basically agreed after a phone call to Ed Slot and Company that it was incorrect. All right?
So we are 13 after the hour right now. Yes. Dennis and Heidi are live in our tiny little studio, but armed, as usual, with a lot of good information about your retirement.
This has been one of the more interesting weeks of my career. I can say unequivocally, I've never had a conversation like that with an accountant before. So, you know, first time for everything, I guess.
Well, you know, it really doesn't surprise me because not only are they changing the tax deadline dates. I mean, you think of last year they moved it.
Yes.
And but they've been adding these special rules in a lot of these stimulus packages. So, I mean, it's got to be hard to keep up because a lot of things that never changed are changing. So,
like the IRA distribution for non-spouse beneficiaries, which generally in most of our parlance means children. Apparently, there's a lot of confusion about how these distributions are going to occur, including from Mr. Ed Slot, who just wrote an article for the Investment News, which is a newspaper for financial advisors. I would urge, he says at the end, toward the end of his article, all beneficiaries subject to the 10-year rule to hold off taking any required minimum distributions this year until we are sure of the rules. So the IRS has come back with some more information in short and said there will be a comment period regarding this, but they're saying these distributions can't happen once in a while for children inheriting generally from parents, non-spouse beneficiaries, that they will need to take this over a 10-year period and have emptied the account, which was previously the case, after the end of the 10th year, but now we'll have to take it throughout the 10-year period as well. So this distribution scheme or change possibly could make a relatively significant difference for children of parents receiving these funds.
Right, and this goes back to that SECURE Act that was passed a couple years ago, which changed the distribution for beneficiaries, non-spouse beneficiaries. And this is just now that the IRS has had some time, they came out with this commentary, and this is what Ed Slot was referring to, which in the explanation from the IRS, it's not exactly the same way as everybody else was interpreting it based on historical practices. Yeah. So this has sort of thrown the financial world into a little bit of a quandary because we're not really sure how this rule is going to be interpreted. So what Ed was saying is maybe we hold off a little bit to see if we get some more information from the IRS just so we can do it the correct way.
Yes, thank you, Heidi, for adding the background. That adds a lot to the story, which I didn't include. I was trying to cut to the chase on that, but I sure do appreciate the background as well. It's amazing how complicated it is. It's amazing, too, the opportunities you have while you're still alive. And we want to talk about that, estate planning and retirement assets. This is actually a class material that we used for the class that we taught for CMU, WCMU. And we had, I don't know, 35, 40 individuals in that class. And we specifically were using the module from Ed Slot and Company. They wanted us to discuss how these assets transfer on death. Because we can all do our estate planning, but the distance between the lip and the mouth, if you will, or however they say that, is really, it can be quite a wide chasm. So first things first, inventorying client assets. And as I was going through this, studying the material Sunday evening, I couldn't sit down. I got so excited. And so Jill, honestly, this is the honest to truth. And Jill said to me, Dennis, why are you pacing around the house, sighing about this material? I said, well, because it's so serious. And, you know, she's trying not to roll her eyes. But I, honestly, it's significant what we get to think about. So think about this. First of all, remember to include, and this is directly from the module here, annuities that have post-death value. Oh, yeah, we have an annuity with XYZ. John's the owner. Sally's the beneficiary. Who are the contingents on that one? I don't know. Life insurance, same thing. These all pass by contract, if you will, by beneficiary. So it's not just the IRAs. It's not just the Roth. It's not just the 401k. It's all these other accounts, too. Other real estate. List location, deeds, and insurance information. Oh, yeah, we own a property in Florida. Would that pass by beneficiary? Well, is it named in the trust? How is that asset named? And would that then be subject to probate? You see how immediately this becomes almost, oh, yeah, well, I forgot about that. And as I went through this, this is what I was thinking. Rental real estate, investment real estate, vacation homes. And then I wrote, in other states? That makes it even more complex. Boats, recreational vehicles, motorhomes. That old motorhome, who wants that? Yeah. Club memberships, ownership interest in a business, evaluation appraisal will be needed. Inheritances or gifts. Oh, yeah. Dad has said we're supposed to get this Roth IRA. Would that go by beneficiary as well if we receive it? You know, before we pass away? Well, yes. So then the importance of you naming a primary and contingent beneficiary on that account, well, even as well, even after you've received it. Valuables hidden or stored. I thought this one was the best. You know, because I always think of the coffee can, the old Maxwell House coffee can in the backyard. Dear, where did we hide that anyway? That sort of thing.
You want to leave it. A map,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. Well, that's in the safe, and I for the life of me can't remember the code for that. What is that? Is it BR549 or XYZ123? I don't know. Anyway, so you get it. The importance of naming all the assets or remembering that it is the big picture when you're coming to estate planning. Remembering those different accounts, those different assets, and then that doesn't even cover the valuables or items of personal interest in your own house. The picture on the wall, the painting, you're not sure where that came from, but you know that your daughter always comments on that painting when she comes to visit. Whatever it might be, she may have a much greater interest in that than those two sons who are always out back fighting in the mud, you know, whatever it is, we get that. So those items of personal value can hold a much more meaning for some rather than others. What a great conversation to have with those that follow. And after this, then, after the break, we've got some other things to talk about in terms of inheriting this, how you inherit it, these different types of accounts, which Heidi will cover right after the break. And yes, Ron.
So clarification, though. You're sure. Talking about paintings and the coffee can in the backyard, stuff like that. You're saying you can make documents that for beneficiaries for all of those items, or would that better be done in the will?
It's not really a formal document. It may just simply be you putting a name on the back of that picture.
Got
of
it.
Whom you would like to receive that particular item. That's what my mother did for me. There was this one picture in the house. It really didn't have any real particular value, but I just had wonderful memories of it because I bid on it in an auction. And Dad said to me after I'd won the bid, he said, you know, if you hadn't won that bid, I was going to step up and get it myself. Yeah, it was just, I don't know, it may have been $20. It wasn't that much, but just great memories of an interaction with Dad. So all of us, you know, think about that. Those items may mean much more than the IRA. I'll speak for yourself there, Dennis, but whatever it is, you know, I get it. So Heidi, we're going to talk about the four ways to transfer assets on death.
Right. There are four basic ways to transfer assets on death, and I'm going to go over those. But first, let's point out that avoidance is really not a viable solution for you. So it is something that everyone has to think about. And I would just encourage people to think about it, because this you worked hard to accumulate all these money and assets over your lifetime. It's a lifetime of work and investment. And you really want what your wishes are to be the ultimate goal. And that is really the ultimate goal of your financial plan, is that what you want with all this hard work that you have saved up over your lifetime, where you want it to go is where it ends up. So let's jump in. The first one is the will. Assets can pass by a will. This comes into action when you die. And one thing you should remember with a will, if you become incapacitated or you're not able to transact business, this is not going to help you. The will does not deal with that situation. With a will, and this is where you list where you want things to go, your assets and possessions will go through a public court of process called probate. So this is where a judge approves that your will is valid, and then your property is appraised and your debts and taxes are paid, and then your estate is distributed after it's approved by the judge. So I would just put out there that this is a public process. So, you know, that could make some people uncomfortable. So maybe you don't want to go the will way, but it is out there. And there could be some costs this way as well, court costs or attorney fees. The second way that is a very popular thing that people do is called a trust. And your assets can pass via a trust. If your trust is revocable and you're alive during your lifetime, it's almost like business as usual. You control the trust and you invest and have control over those assets. And you can make any changes that you may want to make. And usually in the trust, within that trust, there is something that is called the power of attorney. And a power of attorney can help you in that case where if you become incapacitated, or maybe you're in a car accident and you're, you know, at the hospital and you can't pay your bills or you can't make decisions that need to be made. By having a power of attorney, the person you select then can act on your behalf and get some of those things that need to be done, done.
Yeah, we're seeing increasing importance for these documents as, frankly, our clients age. The power of attorney, not only for health care, but also the financial transactions that they need to take care of, whether it's a required minimum distribution, whether it's a transfer of accounts from one place to another, whatever that might be. Sometimes they need help. And whether that's a spouse or a trusted child, it could be one or both.
Or brother or sister.
The power of attorney, or brother or sister, yeah. Close relative, generally, yeah.
And then one thing that is a little different from the will is that this is more private, because distributions made by your trust are done privately. You can avoid the probate process altogether with a trust. And whoever you put in charge of the trust, once you pass away, that is called the trustee, and that person would be the person making sure that your wishes are followed. So it's not done in the public sphere. So that might be attractive to some people. Now, a third way to pass on assets is called a contractual asset. So a contractual asset means that within that setting up that asset, that you designated a beneficiary. So this would be IRAs, retirement plans, life insurance policies, annuities, all these things. When you're signing that application or signing that document, you usually have to pick a beneficiary. So this contractual asset will just pass outside probate right to the beneficiary. So that is another way that assets can be passed to someone else when you pass away. So that brings us back to one of our favorite subjects, which you are probably almost tired of hearing us mention. But please check your beneficiary forms, especially if anything has happened in your life of a major change. Births, deaths, divorces, adoptions. You know, it's amazing how we consistently see people come in and the beneficiary forms are not what they want. And it's just a good practice every year, maybe when you go in to see your financial advisor, to say, hey, you know, let's look and see who's there, make sure it's still who you want it to be. And then we come to the last choice, which is really not your choice. That's when you do nothing. And I have trouble with this word, but it's intestacy. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So if you don't make decisions and you avoid doing anything, this is what will happen. In Michigan, you go by the state law, and in Michigan, if you die with a spouse and children from that marriage, the law states that your spouse inherits the first $150,000 of your property, plus half of what's left, and then your children get everything else. By doing nothing, you have lost that right to choose. So it's all that hard work once again. So I would just encourage everybody to try to make it a point this year sometime to try to just check in and see who your beneficiaries are. Are things going to go where you want them to go?
So. Now, that's interesting. Now, one of the poll questions we asked for that class was, how many of you have done estate planning in the last 5 years? And it was about two-thirds of the class had actually done any estate planning in the last 5 years. Actually pretty good, and I would guess that most of our listeners have kept up with that. But as Heidi was talking, I was thinking, well, frankly, when you don't make a decision, in essence, you do. So are you happy with the prospect of what that could look like, given that you haven't made a decision or even begun to have a conversation with someone who might advise you on that? That's where I would suggest you start, and then give yourself anywhere from 6 months to a year to get it done. So it doesn't have to be done quickly, but you do want to start that project of just having a conversation. If you do want references, we're happy to give those to you. By the way, the phone number at our office is 231-947-3992. We know quite a few estate planning attorneys here in the Traverse City area. We have good reputations and can help you wade through the complexities of getting this done. Not all of you, and we understand that, have a cookie cutter situation. Some of you have children that need extra help. Some of you have children you say, well, I love them dearly, but they never figured out how to manage money, and or I'm relatively certain that it'll be gone within a relatively short period of time. How can I control that? Great questions for an attorney. And then especially if you might become disabled, which obviously has a much greater chance of occurring than death. Given that reality, who would you trust to help you with your financial decisions and or your health decisions too? These are all, in essence, good things so that you don't have to think about them when, you know, the ball is pitched at you.
Yeah, it's sort of like your professional team behind you.
Yes.
That you can handle questions that you have because you have people you can call that you've established a relationship with that
yeah.
you trust.
So you can take a swing and not get hit in the foot, as it were there, Ron, huh?
Hey, I have, can I give a market update?
Sure, yes.
So this is live on Thursday at 10:35, April 15th. The S&P 500 and the Dow, I think, are at record highs. S&P is up 37 points to 4162. The
yeah.
Dow's up 283
yeah.
to over 34,000 now.
Yeah.
Gold and silver are both up over 1%.
Yeah. Assets are moving very positively. A lot is still, believe it or not, a lot of positive information. And, Ron, what a great way to say we've got an interesting stat that Heidi's got with that, too. But don't vote your wallet with what happened in the presidency. I may step on some people's toes with this. But remember, yeah, thank you for dodging there, Ron. remember that a change in the political spectrum doesn't necessarily mean a change in the market forces. Businesses are still operating in the background, regardless of who the current president is. Given that reality, and given the reality of the economy itself, if you make your vote based on who is in the presidency with your assets, you may wind up making the wrong decision, as we've seen this year already in the stock market. Was there another comment you wanted to make, Ron, here?
No, I was just going to add the news. You said the positive news must be coming out weekly. Jobless claims are below 600,000 for last week. They expected about 700,000.
Okay.
And then that that Coinbase, some kind of Bitcoin, went up IPO yesterday, and I guess...
Digital currency.
Yeah, it's a digital currency. It's a market basket of currencies that just came out, and that's been pretty wildly priced here today. Overpriced, I'll say. So, Heidi, some stats there on the stock market.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the S&P. So the S&P 500 is up 10.4% year to date. Total return through the close of trading, this was last Friday, April 9th of 2021. The index has set 20 record closing highs this year, most recently on Friday, April 9th, 2021. So maybe we're going to add one to that now, today. But
yeah,
we'll see.
There you go. Could well be.
We'll see. Then, and that comes from BTN Research. Next, a 30-year-old who is investing $500 at the beginning of every month in a tax-deferred 401k will accumulate $588,032 by the age of 60 if the fund grows at 7% per year. If that individual was forced to suspend his or her monthly deferral for just 5 years from the ages of 35 to 39, he or she would have to earn 8.8% per year from the ages of 40 to 60 to accumulate that same amount of $588,032 by the age of 60. And this comes from BTN Research, but I think Dennis wanted to do the math.
Correct, yeah. My old HP12C here from the previous century says that that number is actually $609,985 for those who are wondering.
Okay. And you said if you invest $500 a month, every month for 20 years.
30 years.
Oh, for 30 years. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Never mind. Well, that'd be 120. Yeah. I've lost it now.
You're trying to figure out how much contribution actually went in.
$180,000. Yeah. 360 months times $500 a month. So a relatively hefty car payment for 30 years.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting about that is obviously, that's not a huge rate of return, 7%, relatively moderate, especially over a 30-year period, number one. Number two, think about it in these terms. If it's possible to start with 500 or even something less than that, isn't it interesting that most of us, as we advance in our careers, tend to be able to invest more as we age? So that $500 may become a relatively small number later in life or later in the career. So hopefully you'll be able to increase that amount. It still doesn't hurt. It's close to 600,000. So thinking about it in terms of a standard withdrawal rate, it's worth about 2,000 a month in terms of income. So what are you doing there? What you're doing is you're transferring funds on an ongoing basis into an asset that can start paying you back because your workplace is not paying you.
Okay. Yeah, and I just think it's interesting given the contrast with if you have to pause for just 5 years, the higher interest, that average interest you have to get back on that to make up that difference. It just shows the importance of that consistent contribution going in over time.
It really does. And it's often the left-handed activities that we do that are almost automatic that wind up benefiting us the most financially. The long view really does pay. You bet. All right, Heidi.
Okay, so this comes from Congress. Careful what you ask for is the headline. It says, the last major tax reform in the United States was signed into law by President Bill Clinton on August 10th of 1993. 15 months later, in the 1994 midterm elections held on November 8th of 1994, the House flipped from a Democratic majority of 258 to 176 to a Republican majority of 230 to 204. The Senate flipped from a Democratic majority of 57 to 43 to a Republican majority of 52 to 48. Sort of interesting.
What would you have to say about that, Ron? I'm just very curious.
I don't see that could happen again. I'd be stunned. Well, we don't know, too, because they're going to redistrict and make new laws. But, boy, that was a huge impact.
It was.
Whatever the tax reform was that maybe when he taxed Social Security, maybe?
What year was that again, Heidi? Was that 83, you said?
93.
No, that wasn't the tax on Social Security. That was under the Bush administration. Okay. I thought that was the contract with America that
Gingrich.
Yeah, that's what
Newt Gingrich did with the Clinton administration at that point. I think that was just about the last time that we actually had a positive. The government actually took in more than it spent that year,
right.
One of those years there, early in the 90s. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to home building. 991,000 single family homes began construction in 2020, the ninth year of increasing home starts since this measurement bottomed out at 431,000 in 2011. The all-time U.S. record for home starts in a single year is 1.72 million in 2005, and that comes from the Census Bureau.
Awesome. Thanks, Heidi.
Got a couple more.
All right.
This comes from the Survey of Consumer Expectations Housing Survey. In a report released on Monday, April 5th of 2021, an estimated one out of every eight homeowners, or 12.2%, with a mortgage had refinanced their loan to a lower interest rate in just the previous 6 months. That is a lot of activity.
I would call that a good bet, given where interest rates have come here recently, really come up. In fact, interesting commentary. And the financial sector anticipated much larger earnings because of rising interest rates, where banks will be able to charge more and have more earnings as a result of that spread between what they're paying their depositors versus what they'll be able to charge for loans on the books. So a lot of interesting positive information. Interest rates even coming up a little bit here is generally good for the economy. It just is.
Yeah. And I have one more stat here on the flu, and we're talking about the flu like in the old days, the regular flu like we used to get every winter. The flu season is defined as the 8 months from October to May. An average of 36,000 Americans die of flu per year over the last decade, but just 22,000 deaths occur during the 2019-2020 season, and that comes from the CDC.
Thank you, Eddie. The balance of the information on the estate planning and retirement assets, we skipped to number six, gather personal information, the family tree, parents, children, grandchildren, prior marriages, information on that. Of course, making certain that the beneficiaries have been updated since that. Children of prior marriages, distant relatives, sometimes... children of prior marriages come into focus when we're making those beneficiary decisions. How are we going to split this account up, depending on where it came from? Which children would inherit and which do not? Obviously, that can be somewhat of an uncomfortable conversation to have. And we have those on an ongoing basis. Mm. It's just reality. So, we help people work through those things. Ages, health, birthdays, residency, and future residency. One of my favorite questions for pre-retirees is, what do you hope that your money will accomplish for you? So while we're talking about all this business side of things, I think it's important to remember, what do we hope to do as a result of making all these difficult decisions? Some of them aren't fun. Some situations in life, of course, are not fun. But what do we hope to accomplish? The couples the individuals that seem to enjoy their retirements the most are those that allow themselves, if you will, to think about what they'd like to do, and not just about, of course, what they want to avoid or the risks that they don't want to take. What is it that we could do? What could we do with what we've got? Would we like to travel? Would we, you know, what loved ones would we like to see? Maybe more than they're comfortable with. You know, you get it. So what would that look like? To me, that's the joy in having done this planning. It's not all easy work because of the shift in responsibility that we've all got to try to figure this out. So as a part of it, of course, in any endeavor, you want to think about what are the benefits we're going to get as a result of having done this. And another part of that may be the charitable mindedness that we'd like to try to accomplish. What groups or activities would we like to try to help along? We get, you know, what makes us most passionate about when we think about helping someone or helping a group? What would give us most passion in that? So years ago, the first one that comes to my mind is Mission India. Gosh, that goes way back. How much time do we have here? About 5, 6, 7 minutes. That's beautiful. So about 12 years ago, I think it was, I went over with another group of businessmen over to India. And they have 3 significant ministries over there in India. And one of those was helping adults learn to read and write, because many of them were totally illiterate and constantly getting ripped off because they couldn't read or write. So we were actually touring different areas, classrooms that they had just on rooftops, everywhere, at many different areas that we were located. This is one of those that we looked at. And I will never forget this. There were, they had those, slates, if you will, like small blackboards, if you will. And they were writing on these and learning how to write. And who was the majority group there? It was mothers, women, who were learning to read and write their own language so that they could understand the signage that they would see throughout the city, previously unable to do so, and constantly getting turned in the wrong direction because they didn't understand it. So, excuse me. Yes, it's important, if you will, to think about the things that give you passion, and some of it may be based on previous experiences and, frankly, organizations you may have forgotten about. What would I really like to see accomplished as a result of me or us helping that group or organization?
So your group that you were in India with was a group of business people?
Business people.
That helped fund or helped did the teaching over there?
Yeah, there's a lot more to that story.
What happens in India stays in India.
I guess so. All we get is a laugh and a smile.
It was an incredibly positive experience, but I don't have enough time to share it. And
I would just point out, Dennis, that these experiences like you had in India, one way to benefit a charity that you feel like that, you know, we talked about that contractual asset. IRA money, traditional IRA money, is some of the best money to give to charities. And you can just write that right on the beneficiary form. You can give any portion. You could just say 5%, 10% goes to this organization. That means a lot to me. And that is one way to provide for that kind of legacy.
Yeah, the reason I smile like that is I recall the board meeting that we were in. And again, I maybe next week. Actually, next week, we're going to be talking about charitable gifting. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that story in that particular boardroom. That's what I was smiling about, and another situation I will never forget. So that's why we bring up the charitable giving, it, obviously it's much bigger than us. What charitable organization can do a lot more with the funds than what you could in any stretch of the imagination by leveraging what you help them with? So some of the other questions, will your surviving spouse need the money? What does she or he think about that? Well, of course I do, or, you know, I'm not even sure. Tell me where I draw the income, right? How's it going to work? Liability issues. Are there liability issues with your career that you want to continue to protect yourself or your loved ones from? And that may be a reason to not transfer it to an IRA. It's just speaking of retirement accounts. Medicaid issues. And then family dynamics. Who gets along and who doesn't? I thought that was one of the better questions in this whole piece. Who gets along and who doesn't? Now, most parents get who that is. But please keep in mind that their relationships, which most of you understand, I may be repeating or teaching the choir here, they're not going to get along the same way when you're gone. When you both, I'll just say this, are gone, your children will not get along in the same way. Because the focus changes from protecting mom and or protecting dad and understanding that, in essence, the assets are theirs, to all of a sudden, oh, this asset is now mine. So then all of a sudden, your siblings become business partners, in essence, in the settlement of that estate. Now, most of us know that we have family members that we really wouldn't mind going, that we're okay going to the funeral, but we really wouldn't want to go on vacation with them, if you know what I'm saying. Given that reality, that was from an old comedian some years ago, that reality is if you're operating that closely with another family member, and especially for a period of time, is that something that you really want to see happen, especially as a parent? And getting this solved and or settled may save them a whole lot of hassle and money in the meantime. And with that, we're going to end the program.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.